2. Low-res skyline. They met in a jungle clearing. Kelsey had done the vegetation, big bright Rousseau leaves, cartoon orchids flecked with her idea of tropical colors, which reminded Chia of that mall chain that sold organic cosmetic products in shades utterly unknown to nature. Zona, the only one telepresent who'd ever seen anything like a real jungle, had done the audio, providing bird calls, invisible but realistically dopplering bugs, and the odd vegetational rustle, artfully suggesting not snakes, but some shy, furry thing, soft-pawed and curious. The light, such as there was, filtered down through high green canopies, entirely too Disney-esque for Chia, though there was no real need for light in a place that consisted of nothing else. Zona, her blue Aztec death's head burning bodiless, ghosts of her blue hands flickering like strobe-lit doves.
"Clearly this dickless whore of the disembodied has contrived to ensnare his soul."
Stylized lightning zigzags rose around the crown of the neon skull in deliberate emphasis. Chia wondered what she'd really said. Was dickless whore an artifact of instantaneous online translation, or was that really something you could or would say in Mexican?
"Waiting hard confirm from Tokyo chapter," Kelsey reminded them.
Kelsey's father was a Houston tax lawyer, something of his particular species of biz speak, tending to enter his daughter around meeting time. Also a certain ability to wait that Chia found irritating, particularly as manifested by a saucer-eyed nymph figure out of some old anime, which Chia was double-damn sure Kelsey would not look like real time were they ever to meet that way. Chia herself was presenting currently as an only slightly tweaked, she felt, version of how the mirror told her she actually looked. Less nose, maybe. Lips a little fuller. But that was it. Almost.
"Exactly," Zona said,
miniature stone calendars whirling angrily in her eye holes.
"We wait while he moves ever closer to his fate. We wait. If my girls and I were to wait like this, the rats would sweep us from the avenues."
Zona was, she claimed, the leader of a knife-packing Chilanga girl gang. Not the meanest in Mexico City, maybe, but serious enough about turf and tribute. Chia wasn't sure she believed it, but it made for some interesting attitude in meetings.
"Really?"
Kelsey drew her nymph self up with elven dignity, batting manga dough lashes in disbelief.
"In that case, Zona Rosa, why don't you just get yourself over to Tokyo and find out what's really going on? I mean, did Rez say that he was going to marry her? Or what? And while you're at it, find out whether she exists or not, okay?"
The calendars stopped on a dime. The blue hands vanished. The skull seemed to recede some infinite distance, yet remained perfectly in focus, clear in every textural detail. Old trick, Chia thought, stalling.
"You know that I cannot do that," Zona said. "I have responsibilities here. Maria Conchita, the rat warlord, has stated that as if we care, right?"
Kelsey launched herself straight up, her nymphness a pale blur against the rising tangle of green, until she hovered just below the canopy, a beam of sunlight flattering one impossible cheekbone.
"Zona Rosa's full of shit," she bellowed, not at all nymph-like.
"Don't fight," Chia said.
"This is important. Please."
Kelsey descended instantly.
"Then you go," she said.
"Me?"
"You,"
Kelsey said.
"I can't," Chia said.
"To Tokyo? How could I?"
"In an airplane."
"We don't have your kind of money, Kelsey."
"You've got a passport. We know you do. Your mother had to get one for you when she was doing the custody thing. And we know that you are, to put it delicately, between schools, yes?"
"Yes."
"Then what's the prob?
Your father's a big tax lawyer."
"I know," Kelsey said. "And he flies back and forth all over the world making money. But you know what else he earns, Chia?"
"What?"
"Frequent flyer points. Big-ass frequent flyer points on Air Magellan."
"Interesting," said the Aztec skull.
"Tokyo,"
said the mean nymph. Shit, Chia thought. The wall opposite Chia's bed was decorated with a 6x6 laser blow-up of the cover of Low Res Skyline, their first album. Not the one you got if you bought it today, but the original. The group shot they'd done for that crucial first release on the indie Dog Soup label. She'd pulled the file off the club's site the week she'd joined, found a place near the market that could print it out that big. It was still her favorite. And not just, as her mother too frequently suggested, because they all still looked so young. Her mother didn't like that the members of Low Res were nearly as old as she was. Why wasn't Chia into music by people her own age?
Please, mother, who?
That Chrome Koran, say.
Gag, mother.
Chia suspected that her mother's perception of time differed from her own in radical and mysterious ways. Not just in the way that a month to Chia's mother was not a very long time, but in the way that her mother's now was such a narrow and literal thing. News-governed, Chia believed, cable-fed, a present honed to whatever very instant of a helicopter traffic report. Chia's now was digital, effortlessly elastic, instant recalls supported by global systems she'd never have to bother comprehending. Low Res Skyline had been released, if you could call it that, a week, well, 6 days, before Chia had been born. She estimated that no hard copies would have reached Seattle in time for her nativity, but she liked to believe there had been listeners here even then, Pac Rim visionaries netting new sounds from indies as obscure even as East Taipei's Dog Soup. Surely the opening chords of Positron Premonition had shoved molecules of actual Seattle air somewhere in somebody's basement room at the fateful moment of her birth. She knew that, somehow, just as she knew that Stuck Pixel, barely even a song, just low noodling around on some pawn shop guitar, must have been playing somewhere when her mother, who'd spoken very little English at that point, chose Chia's name from something cycling past on the shopping channel, the phonetic caress of those syllables striking her there in postnatal recovery as some optimally gentle combination of sounds Italian and English. Her baby, red-haired even then, subsequently christened Chia Pet Mackenzie. Somewhat, Chia later gathered, to the amazement of her absent Canadian father. These thoughts, arriving in the pre-alarm dark, just before the infrared winky on her alarm clock stuttered silently to the halogen gallery spot, telling it to illuminate Low Res in all their Dog Soup glory. Res, with his shirt open, but entirely ironically, and Low with his grin and a prototype mustache that hadn't quite grown in. Hi, guys. Fumbling for her remote, zapping infrared into the shadows. Zap, Espressomatic. Zap, cubic space heater. Beneath her pillow, the unfamiliar shape of her passport, like a vintage game cartridge. Hard navy blue plastic, textured like leatherette with its stamped gold seal and eagle. The Air Magellan tickets in their limp beige plastic folder from the travel agent in the mall. Going now. She took a deep breath. Her mother's house seemed to take one as well, but more tentatively, its wooden bones creaking in the winter morning cold. The cab arriving as scheduled, but magically nonetheless, and no, it didn't honk, exactly as requested. Kelsey having explained how these things were done, just as Kelsey, briskly interviewing Chia on the circumstances of her life, had devised the cover for her impending absence. 10 days in the San Juans with Hester Chen, whose well-heeled Luddite mother so thoroughly feared electromagnetic radiation that she lived phoneless in a sod-roofed castle of driftwood, no electricity allowed whatever.
Taylor, you're doing a media fast before your new school thing comes together, Kelsey had said. She'll like that.
And Chia's mother, who felt that Chia spent entirely too much time gloved and goggled, did. Chia was actually fond of the gentle Hester, who seemed to get what Low Res were about, though somehow without being quite as fundamentally moved as could have been expected, and Chia had, in fact, already tried the pleasures of Mrs. Chen's island retreat. But Hester's mother had made them both wear special baseball caps, sewn from some EMR-proof fabric, so that their young brains might not be bathed quite so constantly in the invisible soup of bad media. Chia had complained to Hester that the caps made them both look like meshbacks.
Don't be racist, Chia. I'm not. Classist, then. It's a matter of aesthetics.
And now, in the overheated cab, her one bag beside her on the seat, she felt guilt at this deception. Her mother sleeping there behind those darkened windows, matted with frost, under the weight of her 35 years, and the flowered duvet Chia had bought at Nordstrom's. When Chia had been small, her mother had worn her hair in a long braid, its tips skewered with turquoise and abalone and carved bits of bone, like the magical tail of some mythical animal swaying there for Chia to grab. And the house looked sad, too, as if it regretted her leaving, white paint peeling from the underlying gray of 90-year-old cedar clapboards. Chia shivered. What if she never came back?
"Where to?" the driver said,
a black man in a puffy nylon jacket and a flat plaid cap. "SeaTac," Chia said, and pushed her shoulders back into the seat. Pulling out past the old Lexus the neighbors kept up on concrete blocks in the driveway. Airports were spooky places early in the morning. There was a hollowness that could settle on you there, something sad and empty. Corridors, and people moving away down them. Standing in line behind people she'd never seen before and would never see again. Her bag over her shoulder and her passport and ticket in her hand. She wanted another cup of coffee. There was one back in her room, in the espresso-matic, which she should have emptied and cleaned because now it would go moldy while she was away. "Yes," the man behind the counter wore a striped shirt, a tie with the Air Magellan logo repeated down it diagonally, and a green jade labret stud. Chia wondered what his lower lip looked like when he took it out. She never would, she decided, if she had one of those. She handed him her ticket. He sighed and removed them from the folder, letting her know that she should have done that herself. She watched him run a scanner over her ticket. "Air Magellan, 105 to Narita, economy return." "That's right," Chia said, trying to be helpful. He didn't seem to appreciate that. "Travel document?" Chia handed him her passport. He looked at it as though he'd never seen one before, sighed, and plugged it into a slot in the top of his counter. The slot had beat-up aluminum lips, and someone had covered these with transparent tape, peeling now and dirty. The man was looking at a monitor Chia couldn't see. Maybe he was going to tell her she couldn't go. She thought about the coffee in her espresso-matic. It would still be warm. 23D, he said, as a boarding pass spooled from a different slot. He pulled her passport out and handed it to her, along with her ticket and the boarding pass. "Gate 52, Blue Concourse. Checking anything?"
"No."
"Passengers who've cleared security may be subject to non-invasive DNA sampling," he said. The words all run together because he was only saying it because it was the law that he had to. She put her passport and ticket away in the special pocket inside her parka. She kept the boarding pass in her hand. She went looking for the Blue Concourse. She had to go downstairs to find it and take one of those trains that was like an elevator that ran sideways. Half an hour later, she was through security, looking at the seals they'd put on the zippers of her carry-on. They looked like rings of rubbery red candy. She hadn't expected them to do that. She'd thought she could find a pay station in the departure lounge, link up, and give the club an update. They never sealed her carry-on when she went to Vancouver to stay with her uncle, but that wasn't really international, not since the agreement. She was riding a rubber sidewalk toward Gate 52 when she saw the blue light flashing up ahead. Soldiers there and a little barricade. The soldiers were lining people up as they came off the sidewalk. They wore fatigues and didn't seem to be much older than the guys at her last school. "Shit," she heard the woman in front of her say, a big-haired blonde with obvious extensions woven in, big red lips, multi-level mascara, padded shoulders out to here, tiny little skirt, white cowboy boots, like that country singer her mother liked, Ashley Modine Carter. Kind of a mesh-back thing, but with money. Chia stepped off the end of the rubber sidewalk and took her place in line behind the woman who looked like Ashley Modine Carter. The soldiers were taking hair samples and slotting people's passports. Chia assumed that was to prove you really were who you said you were because your DNA was there in your passport, converted into a kind of barcode. The sampler was a little silver wand that vacuumed the tips of a couple of strands in and clipped them off. They'd wind up with the world's biggest collection of split ends, Chia thought. Now it was the blonde's turn. There were two boy soldiers there, one to work the sampler and one to rattle off the line about how you'd already agreed to this by coming this far, and please produce your passport. Chia watched as the woman handed over her passport, becoming somehow instantly and up front sexy, like a light bulb coming on, with a big smile for the soldier that made him blink and swallow and nearly drop the passport. Grinning, he stuck the passport into a little console attached to the barricade. The other soldier raised his wand. Chia saw the woman reach up and choose one of her hair extensions, offering the end of this for sampling. The whole thing taking maybe 8 seconds, including the return of her passport, and the first soldier was still smiling now that it was Chia's turn. The woman moved on, having just committed what Chia felt fairly certain would be a federal offense. Should she tell the soldier? But she didn't. And then they were handing back her passport, and Chia was on her way to Gate 53. Where she looked for the woman, but didn't see her. She watched the ads cycle by on the walls until they were called to board by Rose. Seat 23E remained empty as Chia waited for takeoff, sucking on a peppermint the flight attendant had given her. The only empty seat on the plane, she figured. If nobody arrived to take it, she thought, she'd be able to fold the armrest away and curl up there. She tried putting out a negative mental field, a vibe that would keep anyone from getting on at the last minute and sitting there. Zona Rosa was into that, part of her whole girl gang martial arts thing. Chia didn't see how you could seriously believe it would work. And it didn't, because here came that blonde down the aisle. And wasn't that an eye click of recognition Chia saw there?